Welcome, our fellow lovers of love, and thank you for joining us on yet another excursion through the stream of consciousness down the river of tranquility to fill the lake of life with love.
Good evening, everybody out there tonight. Welcome to this edition of Late Night Love. We're delving into the complexities of relationships, parenting, and work as usual. We explore topics from refusing marriage while staying committed to dealing with exes and workplace dynamics. So whether you're seeking advice or simply curious, our candid discussion should leave you pondering the intricacies of love and life. Gotta be one of these.
Yay.
Yeah, well, I should have known because we wanted to start this. We're actually going to do a review, a video, you know, a short review of a short video that we watched yesterday, but I couldn't find it again.
Oh, no.
But we can talk about it anyway. We're talking about how failure can if you're careful about how you approach life, failure is not failure. Right.
Well, it takes work.
Yeah, you have to be willing to. Well, there's this military guy on YouTube, and I forget his channel. I'll have to dig it up. I actually did find it. I couldn't find the video because, you know, who knows how old it was when Facebook, YouTube feeds it to you. Could have been 3 years old. It didn't necessarily have to be a closer one. But anyway, he talked about how early in his military career he had tried out for a special outfit, psychological unit or something. Mm-hmm. And he passed the physical part, but they didn't get selected while most of his class did. And he said that was, you know, it was hard for him. And he finally realized at some point after, you know, maturing and reflecting that, you know, one of the reasons that he didn't get selected was because he was a bit, what was it? It was arrogant. And what was the other one?
Immature,
hot-headed and arrogant. And he says, so that's why he didn't get selected. It was, you know, they never actually told him that, but he figured that's most likely why he didn't get selected. He wasn't mature enough for that role. And so they rightfully didn't select him. And, you know, that was good for him. You know, failure doesn't mean failure. Failure means it's a opportunity to learn, to move forward, and to become the better you, to find out who you are. And quite frankly, what was it? Also, if you haven't failed, you're not challenging yourself.
That's a good viewpoint, yeah.
Because
you have to challenge yourself to reach toward the goal.
Yeah, if you're not challenging yourself, then you're not becoming better. You're kind of stuck where you are. Life is easy.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not failing, then you're not challenging yourself. So there's some food for thought as we go through that, as you go through the night. All right. So as always, you can send us your letters, questions, comments to love@latenightlove.us. You can find us at latenightlove.us. All right, my love. What are we starting with today?
Well, we're going to start with relationships.
Okay.
Is it okay for me to refuse to marry my partner, even if I want to remain in a relationship? Okay, they're very young, late teens.
Yeah, 18 and 19.
They've been together since high school, but they're in college. They're at the same town in college, going through college together. He wants to wait to get married till after they're done with college.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, she wants. Is it okay for me?
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, it's perfectly. Yes, it's perfectly okay. You get to have this. This is a choice for you, right? You get to have your say in this. If you're not ready for marriage, then you're not ready for that kind of commitment yet. You're 18. It's fine. You're 18. You're 19.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfectly reasonable to not want to make that lifetime commitment yet, while also still being in a committed relationship. Doesn't mean you're not on that path. It just means you're not there yet.
Yeah.
And you know, there's nothing wrong with that. So, yes, it is perfectly reasonable. And I think it's mature for you to understand the difference between those two things. So.
You can be marriage-minded and not on the marriage track and just not ready yet.
Yeah. And, you know, lots of people have a differing view on legal marriage versus emotional marriage versus, you know, spiritual marriage. And so those are things you're going to have to come to terms with. Anyway, so there's a lot of discussion to be had about what your long-term relationship is going to be like. And so it's smart for you to just kind of slow down and right? There's nothing wrong with it. You know, I'm not going to say there's anything wrong with making the emotional decision either, but it's perfectly okay to take your time and make slow, slow decisions, especially when you're young. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it when you're older too, but when you're young, you've got your whole life ahead of you. There's no reason to jump too fast. It's just not. Okay.
All right. My husband referred to his ex-wife as his soulmate, and she sent a letter to his house, to our house. Should I be worried about this?
Well, what was in the letter? You know, who knows? It's referred to his ex-wife when is in the past, when they were married. You always feel the person who you're married to is your soulmate. So that's not an uncommon thing. If he's still actively referring to her as the soulmate, then that's probably something to be worried about.
Yes.
But then again, circumstances can happen where, you know, you can feel like someone's your soulmate, but you can't live together. Just can't freaking, you know, you as a couple just don't work. And so in that type of case, is there anything to worry about? Probably not. So it really kind of depends. But is it something to deal with? Yeah, probably. You're probably going to have to figure it out.
And about your own emotions, too.
You know? Yeah, your emotions about it are real.
Yeah.
They're not, shouldn't be sidetracked, shouldn't be put as secondary. They're just as important as everybody else's. And, you know, it's really, that soulmate discussion is how you kind of define it. It's, yeah, we were soulmates, but we're just terrible for each other for whatever reason. And so, you know, it's just smarter for us to not have anything to do with each other. That's, sadly, that's an all too common end of relationship, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't, especially if you get together, you know, go to the question above. If you get together when you're 18 and 19, you feel like that person's your soulmate. And that's going to be a hard thing to let go of. Even when you've let go of the relationship, that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you've let go of the relationship. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, imprinting those feelings when you're young is I don't want to say dangerous thing to do, but you are imprinting a deep feeling when you're young, and it has consequences as you age. So. Should you be worried? Maybe. But if you are, then you are. Kind of seems like she's wondering if she's not worried, but she's wondering if she should be.
Yeah.
Well, if you're not, then don't be.
Then don't worry about it. Don't borrow trouble.
Yeah. You know, you may be curious of what's in the letter, you know, but, you know, who knows?
You can always ask him.
Yeah, but it could just be her apologizing for crappy behavior. Or, you know, them settling some, you know, who knows what it is. These things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you're worried about that letter, ask about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how that response goes will say more than, will probably let you more than if you should be worried or not. Okay. Because, you know, there could be some kids issue or some legal issue that's hang dragging or, you know, an investment thing or, you know, who Lord knows. Some tax issue could have come up, you know, from the past. You know how these things are.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm worried my husband is sleeping with a former student, and I don't know if I'm crazy or not. Okay. they spend a lot of time together. They go out for coffee. She comes over for dinner.
Oh, that's interesting. It depends. You're going to have to figure out why, right? Does she have no other family? And you are essentially replacing her family. She needs a father figure, a mentor, and he's providing that. Because they're fairly open, coming over for dinner.
Yeah, they're not snooking around.
Yeah. And usually, if, you know, you would assume, anyway, that they would try to be more subtle than that.
No, their behaviors are all out in the open, as far as she can tell.
Yeah. I don't know. Without, this is one of those things, without being there and without knowing specifics, it's impossible for us to say. Mm. You're going to have to know more. Because sometimes, as a former student, you end up with someone who has a, say, broken family or you know, and they're a special student. They need some mentorship. They need a father figure or whatever. And for whatever reason, you end up providing that. Past that, it's not uncommon. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you need to be open and honest with this, with your husband, and ask about it. It's the way to deal with it.
Yes.
Yeah. And maybe he has been open with the thing and she's just uncomfortable. And if you're uncomfortable, let them know. Maybe go to coffee with them as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. But unless you have, you know, more than, because she may have more information than she's providing.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for, it's one of these things.
Okay.
Without more thing, it's all impossible, right, for us to actually give up. Are you crazy? No, that's not crazy. There's probably something there that feels wrong. And so deal with it. You know, you might be wrong. They might not be sleeping together. It might be something reasonable, but you're going to have to deal with it one way or the other. Okay.
Okay. I agreed to go on a friend's birthday trip. As it approaches, the costs have become absolutely absurd, and I'm not sure what to do.
So you tell them, hey, I'm sorry, I know I agreed to go, but I can't afford this, and you don't go. Good friends don't ask you to put yourself in debt for a birthday trip. You know, you might be willing to do some of it, but if it's become absurd, then you simply back out. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, friends understand, or they're supposed to. You know?
Yes.
And the economics are economics. If the numbers don't add up, the numbers don't add up. There's nothing you
There's nothing you can do about it.
There's nothing you can do about it.
It's just the way it goes. Yeah.
It's just as there's nowhere for anything to go. You mm-hmm. just have to be honest and say, I can't afford this. So I'm not going to. You know, maybe she'll tone it down at that point. You know, maybe she needs to be reined in on her expenses. Someone has to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe not. You know, maybe they only want to go off and do a huge bash and only the handful of people who can afford it are going to go, but it's all right.
That's what they want.
What she wants, it's what she wants. But you don't need to go into some
into debt
or spend your savings or anything for a birthday trip. So anyway, that's what I would say. Just that's one of those where you just, I can't afford this kind of trip. I'm gonna have to, you know, so what else do you want? Offer whatever present or whatever you can afford. That's what I would do. Mm-hmm. Okay, what's next?
Is it reasonable for me to prefer that my daughter not sleep in the same bed as her mother's boyfriend? The little girl is 11,
uh-huh.
and the boyfriend is 30.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so What, are they all sleeping in like a big, huge bed?
Yeah.
And like she comes in the middle of the night or something, or is it a big?
Yeah.
Yeah. It can, well, as long as she's the one controlling the thing, she's controlling it. You don't want to tell her not to go sleep with her mother. And if her mother happens to be the first one to get up. Now, if it's any other choice than that, right? Then it's a different question. But as long as the 11-year-old is making the choices, the 11-year-old is making the choices.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why you'd feel weird. It's kind of weird, but it's not unusually weird. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So as long as she's making the choices, she's making the choices. She's just about the age where that'll solve itself very shortly.
Very, very quickly.
Yeah. So. Okay, what do we have next?
Okay, my best friend proposed to me. I'm confused and mortified. Where can we go from here?
Okay, she's a 25-year-old female. Her 24-year-old male best friend proposed for her. To her. Well, what do you mean, where can you go? You're confused because you never thought of him that way, but why are you mortified? Is the question. That's the one I would try to understand. You know, confusion is understandable for because it's the world you had living in, you didn't live in. But the world you thought you had, the world you were existing in, wasn't really how you had envisioned it. You had not put those type of feelings on this person. Now, of course, that's a bit extreme. You went from best friend to proposal.
You know, what happened to dating? We kind of skipped that part.
Well, in a sense, he probably feels they've done most of that. They probably have. She just didn't feel it. She just didn't view all those interactions is a romantic setting, and there was a failure to communicate in this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
by both of them, and now that has to be resolved, and once you resolve that, then you can decide where you're going to go from here. And I told you it was going to be one of those nights. It may very well be that there is no relationship after this.
Could be.
Because he's going to be very hurt. He thought there was a relationship there that there has no chance at being. And the only way for him to preserve his mental health will be to remove you from his life, because it simply hurts too much to continue interacting with you.
Yes.
And that's just going to have to be okay with you. And it might be okay with you. You might prefer that as well, because now your whole vision of your relationship has changed and different. So that could be an end, or it could be that you guys can work through this. And who knows what comes out on the other side? You know, you stay friends, but now you have the framework of your friendship actually, you know, mapped out. So you know where the boundaries are, what it is, what it isn't. Or maybe you figure out that, hey, this makes more sense than I gave it credit for. I just hadn't thought of it that way. You know, sometimes love is makes sense. You know, it's not always, love isn't always passion and sparkles and star shooting, you know. Sometimes it's the slow burn of logic and comfort and being accustomed to each other and just kind of knowing who the other person is. It's not always loud.
No.
Sometimes it's very, very quiet.
Yeah.
So who knows? But you are going to have to deal with it. Yeah. You can't just ignore this one.
No.
No. And
he deserves it.
Yeah. Because that's a big, huge risk. He
really put himself out there.
Yeah. And rejection is okay. You have every right to reject. But, you know, you can do that with kindness. Just want to say,
yeah,
you have every right to reject. It's not what I wanted. not the way I wanted this relationship to go. It's perfectly fine. But you can do it with the kindness. Okay, what's next? We got one more relationship question.
Okay. I had to have knee surgery, and my boyfriend keeps asking me for sex. How do I get it into his head? I just don't want sex right now. They're both 19.
Yeah, at that stage, 19, he's not going to get it because he's stupid. It's hormones talking, and you can't really logic your way through hormones. And yeah, knee surgery, it's going to be a few 4-6 weeks before you're going to be in the mood for that. So you're just going to have to be open and let him understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the only way to do it. You know? And this is part of the maturing process, right?
You're right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Of the experience that leads to growth.
Yep. And if this is the kind of part that happens, and yeah, it sucks, but you know, you have your parts too. You know, there are times when you will be unreasonable and he will have to find a way to deal with you. And so when you love somebody, especially when you're young and they're still learning how to become a mature human being, you have to deal with their immaturity. It's part of the journey of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Should you have to? Yeah, probably not, but guess what? Every one of us had to go through it. No one gets out of it. It's just part of the human experience. It's what makes it human. So, yeah. And, you know, hit him with a newspaper. I don't know. Throw pennies at him. Stop it.
Go away.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, for 6 weeks, whatever it is, you're not going to be in the mood, and just let him know. And tell him longer than it's going to be, so you know you can initiate when you're ready.
Yeah.
And he'll be happy because it didn't take as long as you said. So manage expectations. That's what I'm saying here. But you actually have to create the expectation. You're going to have to be clear that no, it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's going to have to learn, and you will learn a lot about him, whether he can mature or can't.
Yeah, you're gonna have some sticky moments, and it's how you handle them, both of you, that is really gonna tell you a lot.
And I also want to say this is the kind of thing that why young relationships don't work. It's because people don't learn their lesson until the relationship's over, and they reflect a year later. I was the person who was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh man, I was the baddie. Dang. Shoot. You know, and then you learn. And so, you know, sometimes that kind of thing is the end of a relationship if they can't find that maturity. Mm-hmm. Sadly. So, all right. So we're on to some parenting questions.
All righty. Is letting your middle schooler go to school in pajamas a thing?
I'm assuming it's a thing somewhere. But should it be a thing? Probably not. And it's not even because I care what the kids look like or that they're presentable. It's that pajamas tend to be like flammable or something. I don't know. It's just. And these days, it's actually hard to tell what's the difference between pajamas and clothes that are designed to look like pajamas.
Very true.
You know, they might look like pajamas, but not actually be pajamas. So I don't know. Here's my thing. Don't worry so much about what other kids are wearing. Just worry about what yours are.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to wear what they're going to wear. You're going to have to, at some point, teach your children to not follow the herd or to pick and choose. Because that's really how you get through life. We all want to be technical, is picking and choosing when to follow the herd and when not to. You know, it's like the gambler. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. That's the trick. And so, you know, pick your battles. You know, the clothes your children wear, where you want to pick your battle. It might be, it might not be. Just pick it with deliberation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so pick your battles. And if that's what you want to focus on, fine. You're going to have to let your kids express themselves somewhere else so they don't need feel the need to express themselves with clothes. You know, that's the kind of thing. Or you're going to have to build kids who are, if, you know, pajamas as clothes as fashion, you're going to have to build kids who aren't sick, don't succumb to fashion easily. To peer pressure, that type of thing. Quickly, that's all.
I just think it's a good idea.
Well, generically speaking, but there is something to be said for going along with the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily a bad life strategy. It's just you have to know when to not. Sometimes, you know, that crowd is going off for a cliff, and so you got to be careful. But, you know, path of least resistance is often going with the crowd. So you don't necessarily want to be an early adopter because a lot of that stuff breaks. You know, a lot of it misses. So there is that. Now, there's a lot of learning, education, and advancement in that. But there's also a lot of pain, failure. And so, you know, these things balance. These things balance. Okay.
Okay. Sick of my children being torn from my arms. Her mother and her mother-in-law.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she's hardly out of the car at their house, and they grab the kids and hustle them into the house, and they ignore her.
Yeah.
And it's all about the kids.
Enjoy the free time. That's my suggestion. Enjoy it. You get to have some time where you don't have to worry about them little nuggets. It's great. Take advantage of the fact that you have some free time. You know, how often have you complained that all you do is have to watch these little nuggets? You love them. You don't want, you know, you'd give your life for them. But at the same time, it's a lot of time and pressure and energy. Enjoy it. Let the grandmas do the grandma thing. Sit back and enjoy it. Now, there are times grandmas and whatnot can be overbearing, but them wanting to come out and grab them little rugrats right out from your things and run into the house, and just enjoy it. It's my suggestion. That's an easy one. Yeah, because at some point you're going to have to put them back, go back home, and life is going to return to normal where you're responsible for them. And yeah, maybe they might fill them for a little sugar, but you know what? They'll crash. They'll have the sugar crash, and you'll have them nice and peace and quiet. So it doesn't matter. Just enjoy it. Yeah.
That's good advice.
Learn to let go. Let him go. It's okay. I get it, especially new moms, right? It's the yeah, let go. Trust me, if that's probably her first child, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. By your second or third child, no, please get them out of here. Go. Just learn to, yeah, there's no better thing than just, I'm going to repeat myself for the 10th time, so I'm not going to. So.
Okay.
All right. What is next?
Am I entitled to a key to my daughter's bedroom? Okay, the daughter is 19.
Yes. You, as the homeowner, still need to be able to have access to the house for all kinds of reasons. Plumbing issues, electrical issues, fire issues. You know, yeah. Yeah, you don't use it. I have the key to my daughter's room. She's 25. Sometimes she forgets her key. Guess what? We don't have to drill it out. I can open it up. I don't use the key, but I have it.
For emergencies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should be able to get into every room of your house if needed. So it's perfectly reasonable for her to want to have a key to her room. Great. But you have to have access to it because there's 100 things that can happen. Don't happen very often. You know, you should almost never need to use it. But at the same time, you know, if the gas inspector comes in and needs access to that room, guess what? You got to get access to the room. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the household is entitled to have a key to every room in the house. Doesn't mean you're entitled to use it except for an emergency. So, how's that? As a human, just for, as a human respect issue, right? But for safety and, you know, practicality of maintenance, yeah. Yeah. Okay. What is next?
What's it like to have a sister brother duo? Okay. She was raised in a family of all girls. Mm-hmm. He was raised in a family of all boys. Uh-huh. They have a girl. Now they're expecting a boy. And they're wondering if they can do anything to, you know, prep.
No. They're just kids. Yes, they're going to be different as they grow up, right? Because generally speaking, boys and girls are different. And then you add the fact that they're two different human beings, born at two different times. One has a younger brother. The other has an older sister. Yeah, they're going to be different. But at the same time, you know, that mother, that brother-sister relationship is going to be its own thing. You can't prepare for it. All you can do is to be prepared to be the best parent you can to each child. And that relationship will take care of itself. There's nothing you can do to prepare for that other than the, what you would do to prepare to raise your child. That's it. They will deal with that relationship themselves. Any attempts for you to manipulate that, remember, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Your attempts to manipulate that relationship will have its own reaction. So stop it. Just let it be its thing and sit back and enjoy it. My daughter's a very strange combination of femininity and masculinity. You know, she was raised by three older brothers. You know, it's, but she never lost her somehow, and me, you know, since 7 years old, I essentially raised her. So three older brothers and a father is what raised her. So she's got this strange feminine thing. And it is what it is. Children grow into what they grow into. You can't plan for it. It's going to come out differently than you plan anyway. So just plan like you normally would. Don't worry about that relationship. Because there will be times where they love each other. There will be times where they hate each other. And oftentimes it will be at the same time. So it just is what it is. All right. So what's next?
Teacher keeps lights off all day in preschool. How would you approach this?
Well, what do you mean? Is it have a, like half a room with the light with the windows and she's just using natural light because she prefers the natural light to that fake artificial fluorescent stuff that gives people headaches? Then you don't. Are kids sitting in dark rooms getting headaches because they can't see what they're looking at? Those are two vastly different things, right? So if the room is well lit by natural light, you don't say nothing. She's using natural light. Leave her alone. Maybe she's a little hippie-ish. I can respect that. But as long as there's enough light, don't worry about it. It's my suggestion. Mm. Now, maybe it's one of those, it's very dark and whatnot. Maybe she has light sensitivity. She's got cataract issues or something. Mm. You can bring it up to the administration, I suppose. But if it's a half the wall is, you know, I remember in school, you know, you had a classrooms where one wall was essentially windows.
It was.
You didn't need light, except maybe on the darkest of days, right? You didn't need the lights. The lights didn't do anything. I mean, they may have evened out the lighting a little bit, but they didn't actually provide more. It was fine. Now, other classrooms, you know, needed lights because you'd be sitting there in the dark. I can't even see my hand because you're in the middle of a building, right? You're in the inside classroom of a building. There's no windows. You know, I turn those lights off. You can't see nothing. So it really does depend. But as a rule of thumb, preschool, those are usually open, well-lit rooms with lots of windows. So I wouldn't worry so much about it. She probably has an issue with the lights. You know, maybe the LED lights, the blue lights she doesn't like, or the fluorescent lights. Maybe one of them has a buzz, and she just can't take the buzz, so she'll leave the lights on. And if that's the case, then you go to the administration, hey, can't you fix her light? You know? So it's not driving all of us crazy. So if it concerns you, talk to the administration about it, you know, or ask her why. But if she's got half the classroom as windows, leave it alone.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, what's next?
Unlicensed teen stole my car. 15-year-old stole her car, and she wants to know what an appropriate punishment is because she's furious right now.
I can't say anything because I did that many, many times at that age or younger.
I was too afraid. If my mother found out, she would have killed me. I never took her car. My sister did, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a relatively common thing. This is one of these things where something my grandfather said to me that, you know, I'm going to repeat here. I got away with things that you can't get away with these days. And this is that same discussion. Is teens today can't get away with what I got away with. When we got caught, I wasn't the one driving, but when we got caught driving around in our parents' cars, they took us home. Right? Dropped us off at the house. And went and had a discussion with the parents. That's what the police did back in the days. This is in the 80s. They're not going to do that these days. Right?
Yeah.
No. You're going to juvie, and your parents are getting a big bill because they're going to use your parents as a cash register. So that's the discussion you have, is the reality of the consequences. And so the other side of that is get them their license. I know this is counterintuitive, but what they're actually telling you is they need more freedom than they have. Get them on the path to get their license.
Yeah.
Then don't let them use it as their punishment for a little while, 3 months. After they get it, don't let them use it for 3 months. That's showing them mutual respect. They're still getting punished. You're still putting them on the path of something they are just playing they need. Then they have a chance to show some responsibility during that period of time. You know, children will fail. And they made a fail. So, you know, be creative. Because the problem with punishing a child for this kind of a strict, straight punishment is they just become more rebellious. And then you end up in this spiraling fight of rebellion. Don't do that. You know, you're the adult. You're the one who can see the longer term goal and think and plan longer. So do that. That's my thing. It's because, yeah, I did the same thing as a teenager. What I needed was more responsibility, not less. You know, I was working. And instead of, you know, I was already working, washing dishes, earning my own money. I could have gotten my own car. You know, so. But instead, because I didn't have the right grades, I couldn't get my license. And so my rebellion from that was, fine, I'll just go drive anyway. I'm smart enough to know how to, I knew how to drive a car. So anyway, don't give them something to rebel against, but you can still have hold the consequences, you know? But also explain that you can't get away with these things like you used to be able to.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. What's next?
Everything but crawling. Okay. She's worried because her baby is on all fours, rocking, you know, does the wiggle worm to get where it rolls, where he wants to go.
Uh-huh.
He's doing everything but crawling. And she's worried. Is there something she should be doing?
Well, you can help him crawl, you know, get down there, help him with the movements so he can learn some muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
So get down there with him and crawl with him and actually help him crawl. You can actually be over him. And the nice thing about babies, you could actually be right over them and crawl, and you can kind of have some little fun little games out of it. And he'll find the joys of crawling. You know, but babies will take the path of least resistance. If they learn to roll over first and they can figure, hey, I can get pretty much anywhere I get rolling, that's what they're going to do. And so you're going to have to actually literally teach them how to crawl. My guess is because he's doing everything else, it's not a developmental thing. It's just an opportunity thing.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have to actually just sit there and teach him. It's all right. Crawl with him. If you're like me, that's, oh, man, getting up might be not be so fun, but get down there. Move his hands and arms for him, legs for him, and show him how to do it. Because he's doing the rocking thing. He wants to kind of go, but he doesn't understand the movements that you can pick up one hand, balance on the other three, put it down, and then you can move forward. All right. Because his experience is when he picks up one hand, he flops over. And so, right. So you're going to have to kind of teach him how to do it. That's all.
Yeah.
But if he still struggles after a month or so of that, then you take him to a doctor because there may be something else going around. But my guess is, he's probably pretty close to doing it by himself anyway.
He's really close. But yeah.
Yeah, give him a hand. Get down on the ground and crawl with him. Help him crawl if you have to. You know?
Yeah.
Make sure you laugh a lot while you're doing it.
Yeah.
Because they like laughing, and if they're enjoying the process, he'll try to crawl for you just for so you can hear you laugh. They will. Children love laughter. It's one of the first things they understand. So if they can make you laugh, they want to make you laugh. So, you know, make sure you're laughing while you're doing it. Make it fun. And he'll do more. It's just kind of how it works. And enjoy the process. Because it only happens once. That's what I'm saying.
It's such a short window, too.
It really is. It's such a short window. So enjoy the process. I know it can be frustrating, but enjoy the process. Just take a step back and remember that this only happens one time per child. It's a unique experience.
Yeah.
And enjoy it. Because once it's gone, it's gone. You can't hold on to it.
No.
Okay. Oh, we're on to work questions. All righty.
Yes. What is a healthy ratio of hours spent on tasks you like and tasks you don't like?
There's no singular healthy ratio, right? Because, you know, sometimes you get stuck with tasks you don't, a string of tasks you don't like. You just have to kind of get through them. But there comes a point, and you just know this point as an individual, where I don't want to do this anymore. And then you've known you've crossed that line somewhere back there. Because there is no single point. Now, a lot of people say knock the difficult tasks out first. You know, when you start your thing, make a short list, 5 things. Knock the 3 most difficult things out first. Save the easy stuff for last. Some say knock a couple easy things out first. Get a couple wins under your belt. and then move on to some difficult tasks. Me personally, I spread them out over the course of the day. I do phone calls and emails in the second half of the day and kind of mind-numbingly tasks first thing in the morning, just so I can get into work mode, so to speak. So, you know, but I don't always get to answer every email in the afternoon or evening. Sometimes I have to do it in the morning. You know, if I'm dealing with someone on the East Coast, I have to deal with it in the morning. So, you know, none of these things are gospel. But what I can tell you is if you have a job that you find meaningful, the tasks you like and don't like become less relevant because the end goal becomes what you focus on. So ultimately, what you want to do is design your life where you're doing something with meaning. Or whatever, even if what you are doing doesn't have meaning, what you do with the proceeds from that has meaning. Gives you the motivation to keep going. Where the task is irrelevant, the end result is what you care about. Mm-hmm. So, but hey, if you're in your 20s, you don't usually get to make that choice, right? So, you make do. You do as best you can. So, you know, you don't usually get that choice until you're in your 30s, late 30s, 40s, where you actually get to make those kind of choices.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I tell my new job availability after they've hired me? She doesn't want to work on weekends. That's when her partner is home.
Okay, but did they discuss the job hours during the hiring process?
No.
That's probably one of those things you should have discussed during the hiring process. Why they didn't do it is odd. I've never had someone tell me during the, you know, not tell me what the hours were. Mm-hmm. I've gotten to have negotiations of when the hours were. Really? I can't start later than that. Yeah. Well, not quite that way of a discussion, but yeah, I've gotten to start later. You know,
mm-hmm.
If you're good, they'll accept some compromises on hours and times and days. It also kind of depends what the job is. Maybe it's just a 9-to-5 job anyway, and there is no weekend work. You know, or see a waitress where they expect you to work weekends. Don't know.
Okay.
So you can tell them whatever your job availability is, but, you know, there will be repercussions for that if they hired you to work weekends and now you're all of a sudden telling them you can't. But if there was no discussion, I don't understand how you could be hired without having a discussion when you're expected to work. There has been a failure to communicate somewhere here. there's a communication error, which doesn't look good for either one of them because A, she should have asked, and B, they should have said. So, you know, this job isn't starting off on the best of foot. There's some bad signs here. Okay, what's next?
Okay, should I let my next door neighbor know we work together? She works remotely, right?
Uh-huh.
And she attends Zoom meetings, but she views the Zoom meetings. She doesn't go on camera.
Uh-huh.
And she noticed several times that now that the neighbor is on the Zoom call, they work together.
Okay.
So she's wondering if she should notice, hey, if she should say something.
She can if she wishes. She doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's very little etiquette for this kind of thing right now. I mean, I suppose at some point there will be an etiquette for this that will kind of, and guess what? You get to decide it. Yay, you. You get to be one of the front lines of making the decisions on how this type of etiquette works. Because I don't know. So, you know, if your next door, if it was a neighbor down the street, yeah, sure, why not? Your next door neighbors, do you really want to know if your next door neighbor works? Now, if you're commuting, you want you to know your next door neighbor. It's great because you can kind of share the commute costs if you work the same shifts, that kind of thing. So it does happen. So it's not unusual for you know, coworkers to know where you live. But at the same time, it's not someone who you actually interact with on a daily basis and you kind of can get to know their character and whatnot. except as your next door neighbor, you do get to know them. And you're just going to have to make this kind of decision based upon, you know, your knowledge of your neighbor and your kind of wishes. There is no right or wrong thing here. Of course, at some point he may figure it out and then say, okay, you never told me. But then you just said it would have felt weird is the answer. Most people understand that.
Yeah.
So there is no right or wrong way to deal with this. You're just going to have to kind of figure out how you want to. And congratulations, you're on the front line of social evolution. Okay. All right.
Okay. Colin keeps looking at my screen. It's uncomfortable and annoying. What can he do?
Well, but you can actually, okay. So you, one of the things to do is the kind of thing we would do back in the days is you just simply call him out. You know, once he gets called out, then you generally stop. They don't like to have that kind of attention drawn to them. But of course, the other question is, why is he looking at your screen?
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. I don't know. What is it, Miss Kravitz, trying to see if you're working? I don't know. I don't know. It's uncomfortable and annoying. Yeah, it's uncomfortable. You just call them out on it is what I would do. Say, dude, your screen has to be more interesting than mine. I don't know what. So, I don't know. I don't have a good answer to that because it's not really overtly. It's not like it's harassment. It's just strange behavior. And what are you going to do? Go to your boss. Bob, Joe keeps looking at my screen. You know, that's just kind of, you know, God, that's not very manly now, is it? So I suppose the thing you can do is you call them out and use social pressure to get them to stop. Of course, that's assuming there's social pressure without knowing the details. Is he walking by to look at your screen? Is his desk behind you and he's turning around? Is he actually looking at your screen, or are you misinterpreting something? You know, there's 100 things that theoretically could be going on. But my guess is, here's one thing. Ask him about it. Just by asking him about it, you may be very able to end it. Because then he'll be uncomfortable and we'll stop.
Hopefully.
Yeah, but that's the next step, I guess.
Yeah.
Yo, dude, why do you keep looking at my screen, man? What are you expecting to see? So I suppose would be some way to do that. Okay, what's next?
Worst thing about finding a new job.
The worst thing about finding a new job is actually the process. You know, it feels a bit dehumanizing sending out your resumes, going to these interviews. You know, you're not saying falsehoods, but you're shining the best light possible and kind of ignoring things that you know you don't want people to see. You know, many people don't understand that you're interviewing companies. The same, it's, you know, those interviews, it's a two-way interview. You're interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you. Mm-hmm. And if you go into it with that, you have much higher feeling of power. You don't feel so small. Mm-hmm. But it really is. It can be a dehumanizing experience, especially if you're one of those who are looking for, you know, a high-end job in a small field and you have to apply to 100 of them. You get rejected by, you know, 50, 60, 70 in a row. And it's a pounding on your ego that it's hard to take. And that's the worst thing about finding a new job.
That's for me. It always was. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a hardcore pounding of the ego. It's that rejections, you know, and it's the reality is there's people out there that are better than you. There's people going to make decisions that you know, people will work cheaper than you. There's, you know, there's all these various issues why you don't get hired. 2/3 of them have nothing to do with you as an individual. You know, but the reality is, it's still a rejection of you. And it hurts. And that's the absolute worst part about finding a new job. Because over after time, it feels dehumanizing. And that's why people hate doing it. That's why you end up with people who get stuck, who don't look for work, who would be good workers, but they don't look for work because they just can't, they can't put up with that pounding on the ego, being rejected. Go. It's not easy getting rejected from McDonald's, right? It's not easy getting rejected from Walmart. But it happens every day. Sometimes just because they don't have a job opening right now.
Yeah.
And you get rejected, but it's still getting rejected. And it's not easy. All right. So what's next?
Why am I so lazy to get up in cold weather?
Because it's cold. We're mammals. That's why. It's, you know, you want to stay warm. It's what we do. It just is. It's not that you're lazy, and it's just that it's cold. And who wants to get out of warm things when it's cold? It's a perfectly natural human thing. But, you know, and also remember, back in the days, maintaining warmth, you know, was very difficult. Back in the days of human evolution, go back 4,000 years, 5,000 years, 10,000 years. Maintaining warmth is the difference between death and survival. So maybe that instinct to stay warm, to keep warm, to hunker down and stay warm during a cold snap is instinctual. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a handful of us, as always, that thrive in those kind of conditions. Nature has a way of creating just enough people who like going out in the cold and doing and doing weird stuff to let the rest of us survive through the winter. Just like there's a, just enough night owls to stay and tend the fire, you know, so all the day workers can sleep. Nature has a way. You know? There's just enough night owls to tend the fire. There's just enough night owls to have the shipping goods shipped across the country. There's just enough people who like the cold to go out and work in the cold. There's just enough people who like the ocean to go and sail the seas despite not knowing what the heck is out there. It's strange how nature provides a way. Yeah, the rest of us wouldn't come close to doing that kind of thing. People crazy? It's cold out there. I'm not going to put on skis and go down a hill. I'm not going to climb a mountain. Are you crazy? Why am I going to climb Everest? What's the point of that? But yet, there's enough of us who are going to go brave the cold and stuff. They love that stuff. The rest of us think they're crazy. There's something genetic, something evolutionary about that. It has an evolutionary purpose. Survival.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
If being a bully at work and being rude is rewarded as promotions in increments, why aren't these courses on the internet at work to be a work bully and rude?
It's not being a work bully and rude that gets promotions. It's the willingness to take on tough tasks and get them done that gets promotions. And what happens is these people who are bullies or who are rude, they take on tough tasks and then they may bully them and be rude and all that to get them done, but they get them done and so they get promoted. That's what happens. Now, you don't have to be a bully and to be rude to take on tough tasks and get them done. It's not a requirement. It's actually not the best way to do it. But the problem is the quiet ones who can manage to do that, they don't take on the tough tasks. They wait for someone to assign it to them. You got to volunteer for that stuff. If you want to be promoted, you want to rise up the chain quickly like those people do, you got to be willing to take on the tough task with a high point of risk of failure. And even if you fail, you still might be promoted because you were willing to take on something that everybody knew was going to be a failure.
Yeah.
But you're willing to try it anyway because someone had to. So don't think of the rudeness and the bullying behavior as why they're getting promoted. It's not why. It's because they're doing something that other people aren't. Taking risks. Being willing to be seen, be heard. So that's the part of the thing you want to emulate. Not the behavior, the risks they're taking. They're taking on the difficult assignments. Doing things others aren't willing to do. That's what you want to do. Okay. We are just now an hour in. We want to run through these real quick?
Yeah, we usually get pretty late, so I just added a few.
And I removed one because I didn't even know what the hell it meant.
Okay. What's the quickest way to get a man or a woman to orgasm? Well, they're two different animals, so, you know.
Well, it's actually the same on both. It's all pregame.
Ooh.
Doesn't matter. You get the more excited they are before you start, the faster you can get them to finish. That's all I'm saying. The specifics will be different based on the person you are dealing with. So I can't give you any specifics, but I can tell you it's all pregame. Right? So, you know, start planning. Okay, what's next?
What kind of nudes do women want? We don't want nudes.
Oh, you guys
don't. We don't care.
No, if you want the abs. And abs.
We want chestful hair, you know.
If they want abs, maybe a nice butt. Yeah, don't send them a picture of your junk. They don't want that.
We don't care.
So if you're like me, don't send them any nude pictures. Because that's not going to...
You gave me a shirtless view. It was on cam.
Yeah, but that was 12 years ago.
Yeah. 12?
Wasn't it 12?
Try 14 coming up in July.
Hey, I had a concussion. I don't know anything about time.
July 8th.
Really, it's 14? I thought it was 12. And then again, I don't know. I have to count for my daughter to figure out how old my kids are. So it's not. I know how old my daughter is, and I have to count up for the rest of them.
No, we're in our 13th year.
So then I was right. It was 12. And we're in 13. It's close enough. Hey, man, I'm close enough for conversation.
We have been together 13 years.
It was close enough for conversations, man. All I'm saying, it was a long time ago, and I was not so grandpa bod.
Well, I feel you were giving me full disclosure. You thought that's what I was concerned about, but I wasn't, but you were. So I just went along with you, you know. You needed to do that. So you felt secure. So I did. And I made a woo-woo comment and, you know. But it was the nose wrinkle that did it for me. I'm sorry. And you're doing it right now. Oh, my God.
All right. So that's how you get women to orgasm. All right. So what's next?
Okay. My girlfriend wants to watch me have sex with a man. Okay, now they're both in their early 20s.
Okay, so she has a fantasy thing. And here's the thing. She's probably not going to like it as much as she would think.
No. Fantasies are always wonderful. Yeah. Everything's perfect. Nobody farts, you know.
It's one of these things. She probably likes it in her adult entertainment. And so she's thinking that she will find it as stimulating in real life. And she might. It's just not a high chance of success.
No, porn is always, you know, they make it glamorous and perfect. and everybody's super hot all the time, you know, but that's just not the real world.
No, and the other thing is, unless you're into it, it's not going to be fun. So,
yeah, why would you do it if you're not into men?
Now, if you've got an interest in that type of thing, and you know, if it is, you are curious about it.
Yeah, there you go.
Knock yourselves out, but these things rarely turn out the way you think they do. It usually just ends up being awkward. All right, what's next?
Okay. I tested positive for chlamydia, but I haven't had sexual contact in years.
Okay, now, hey, most STDs, you can get them in other ways than sexual contact.
Yes, you can.
And so I don't know specifically about chlamydia. I didn't look it up. I meant to, but I forgot. But some of them can also stick around for a while and go unnoticed.
Yeah, they really can.
And I should have actually looked. This is how you get weird search histories. Let's take a quick look. Let's see what we can find out. Let's see.
It's caused by bacteria. No symptoms in the initial stages.
Well, the nice thing is they're treatable, so don't worry too much about it. There are other ways. It does say.
Actually, you can have a chlamydia eye infection if you had genital contact with the eye. I didn't know that.
No, you know, that's a rare one. My guess is there's even rarer ones that they don't put on here. There's other ways to get it because it's just a bacterial infection. And so who knows? And maybe it can stick around. Maybe she's not so honest about her sexual contact. Her sexual contact.
You can do it by touching genitals, even. You don't have to have actual sex.
And so, but anyway, don't worry so much about it.
Or intercourse, I should say.
Just go get it treated and taken care of.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world.
No.
And you're luckily, you got one of the, if you're going to get one, I suppose, right?
An STD, then you kind of choose chlamydia, yeah.
If you're going to get one, that's one of the ones to get, I suppose. It's one of those that's treatable and you don't have to worry about it again. So, you know, but as I have learned, STDs have other ways of getting it other than direct sexual contact. Even just because that article we looked at didn't say any other options, didn't mean there wasn't any. But just get it treated. Don't worry so much about it. Yes, I feel you. How did I get it? When you get something that others consider an STD and you didn't have any risk factors is a frustrating experience, but at some point you just have to let it go. And there's nothing to do than just let it go, and it is what it is. All right. That's it for us tonight. We want to thank you for joining us. For me and Lubby, have a good week. Good night. And please remember to love everybody.
Good night.